Leaders Questions with Ger Gilroy and Stuart Lancaster.
In association with Goal.
From Off the Ball.
All right, you're very welcome along to this week's episode of Leaders Questions with Stuart Lancaster. I'm delighted to say our guest this week is the Chief Executive Officer of Vodafone, is Anne O'Leary. Anne, thanks for coming to the studio for us. How are you?
Delighted to be here.
I was telling Stuart a little bit earlier on, this is a big weekend for you guys. Are you partaking in this year's Dublin City Triathlon?
Yes.
You are?
Unfortunately.
Your triathlon's a big thing for you.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I used to be a very big, avid triathlon person. Yeah, I used to do about 8 races a year and 2 half Ironmans and all that. But actually, I only did one last year, which was DCT, and I'm only doing one this year. So I'm a bit apprehensive because I have to go home and get all my gear and get organised. And then I have to try and go really fast while 150 Vodafone employees all try to beat me. And I usually do okay, but I'm not as fit as I used to be. So it's going to be a bit of pressure. But I think I'm going to do it, and then I think I'm going to go back next year and do a few more because I've got a bit lazy.
A half Ironman suggests a half craziness, if I may be so bold. The Ironman is completely mental, I think. Normal triathlon, little sprints are great. Starting to get into them myself.
Oh, yeah.
Only doing one leg of it, mind you, to start with. but they're amazing.
No, but DCT, so we have 150 employees with a relay.
Right.
So it's great. So it's just trying to get people into fitness and wellness. And it's only, whatever, 750 metres swim, 20k bike and 5k run. And you only do a part of it. So actually, it's a great way for people to start. And I started that way. Well, I was a competitive swimmer as a kid.
Right.
So I used to be asked to do the swimming part of the relay because you can never find swimmers.
No.
But what I would say is Ironman is very tough. But half Ironmans are a bit more, you know, it's 2.9k swim, 90k bike, and half a marathon. So they're a little more doable. Yeah, I know. But a friend of mine now is off to do Ironman tomorrow. But yeah, that's a bit compulsive, obsessive, I'd say.
Yeah.
So it's just trying to get the balance. But no, I said I'm going to do tomorrow. I have to just try to get through it, look good for the photographs, make sure that the whole of Vodafone don't beat me. And I think, I said to my husband this morning, I think we need to go back and do a few. It's
right.
Nice to have an aim when you're training.
I'm going to try and do a full one next year. We're doing relay tomorrow, so.
What leg are you doing?
I'm doing the cycle. Yeah.
Where do you want to do the full one? Maybe you do DCT next year.
Yeah, well, we're doing DCT tomorrow. The full DCT. Yeah, I could do that. Or we did Hooker by Cook down in, that's amazing, down in Dunmore East.
Dunmore, beautiful.
Yeah.
I've done that race, loved it.
Do you work out a lot? Are you physically fit now?
I go to the gym, but I don't do.
Do you do the training with players? Do you do any of that stuff?
No. I would. Obviously, when you're coaching the players, it's nice to be able to sort of keep up with them and run around and, you know, and be active. But I don't actually physically do the weights or whatever. I get up early, do my training, get into work early, and then
Is that important to you to be?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
to be physically fit.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think as a leader, you've got to be able to, particularly as a coach, you know, set the example and live a healthy lifestyle and show that you look after yourself. And it's not a prerequisite. You know, I'm sure there'll be lots of coaches out there going, "Geez, I don't do any of that." But no, it is for me. And I like to be able to be, you know, when I'm coaching the players, literally in amongst them, and you know, to be moving around and be close to the contact areas and the decision making, so I can pull them in and then give them feedback, and then away we go again. And you know, I think people have talked about this Tuesdays. I'm running around with them, and I want to make sure that we're the fittest team, and that we can deliver under pressure. I've never not trained, but I probably lack a bit of the triathlon. You know, in the spirit of triathlon, you know, a purpose at the moment. You know, a goal.
Yeah,
a goal. I think it's maybe a midlife crisis. I feel like I shouldn't like climb a mountain or something, or do a triathlon. But
yeah, well, that's
I'm not a very good swimmer, and so maybe it's climb a mountain.
Yeah, or we could all do a triathlon next year. Is this like part of work as well, though? Like it's you know, obviously the sponsorship thing. You've got staff involved, but like, was that always part of your work life balance thing that you realised that you needed to do this? The obsessive bit is something we should definitely come back to in a minute, though. You just drop that in there and we'll definitely come back to that.
No, I mean, look, personally, I know I need to train and exercise to be at my best, you know. So when I wake up in the morning, I don't necessarily want to go out for a run or go swimming. I love to stay in bed because I love my sleep. But I do, because I know I'm much better when I get to work. And I think as a leader, and especially as a CEO of such a large company, I have 2,000 people, Like, you just never know when you walk in what's going to be thrown at you. And what I've learned is you have to be kind of physically and mentally at your best to deal with everything you have to deal with. And I always talk about that to my people. So I just feel better. I'm in better form. You know, I look better. It's just a whole thing. And it's about mental well-being as well as physical. So that's why we sponsor. I mean, we did sponsor triathlon and we kept up with DCT because we wanted something that all the employees can participate in. Mm. That also the relay thing that they can get involved, that it's not a marathon.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to be doing Ironman or whatever. So whether it's a 5K run or whatever. So for me, definitely mental and physical well-being, emotional well-being, emotional stability is really important for me. And then I know it's important for all my people as well. And it's worked, you know, most of the people that join Vodafone and come to, they come and they might have been into fitness or whatever, and they kind of get into it. I suppose you get like the people you're with as well.
Yeah, it's conditioning.
It is, yeah. You know, and as I get older, I think even more so. And it's a bit of a cycle. So, you know, if I train in the morning and I go to work, you know, I eat better. And then I'm tired at 10 o'clock at night, so it makes me go to bed and I get my sleep. It's a whole cycle thing. So it's really important to me.
Did you know this at like 12, 14, 16, 18? Did you kind of understand that exercise and that was actually having a knock-on impact on your own mental health? Is this?
No, I don't think so. So as I said, I was a competitive swimmer, but only up to about 13 or 14, and then I gave up. But then I went into aerobics. I was an aerobics instructor. I actually used to teach London Irish rugby. I lived in London and I used to do some with the rugby teams. When it was wet outside, I'd come and do aerobics for them. So I've kind of laughed at that now. So I was always, I qualified as an aerobics teacher and earned extra money doing that. So I always was into fitness.
Right.
And then I went back to master swimming, like from 20 years. I competed at 20 on. I used to go to galas and that when I came back to Ireland. So I kind of just knew I felt better and I loved racing. And then it went to the triathlons, doing the swim part of a relay. Then I started running once or twice a week, and then I got the bike like everyone else. And then I said, sure, I can do it all. And I think a lot of people get into triathlon that way. But I just know I feel better. I mean, there wasn't a lot of talk about mental health back then.
No.
As there is now. But of course, actually, my mother did suffer from depression. And I learned more about that years later that she did. But it was never there that I felt I had to do it for that reason. But I think all the data and insights are there that people that exercise and look after themselves are mentally and physically and emotionally better. And I feel it more as I get older that I need it, and for energy levels. And just, I think there is those happy endorphins that
they're a real thing.
They're a real thing.
Yeah, especially the competitive thing that comes out in you when you're doing it as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of things. The obsessiveness and qualified aerobics teacher in London to the CEO of Vodafone in Ireland is quite the journey. Where does that start? Like, at what point do you go, yeah, you know, I want to get into the corporate world. I want to, like, as a 16-year-old, what did you want to be?
I didn't really know, but my mother decided I was going to be a nurse. And I think I was, you know, oh, that sounds fine.
You've obviously been an awful disappointment the whole way through after that.
No, the day before the interview, I said to her, I'm not going to be a nurse because I really think nursing is a vocation. And I'm really not a nurse. You know, I'm like the ones, you know, you're sick, get up and walk, you'll be fine. You know, it's just not my nature. So I went off and I did this kind of secretarial course for a year. And when I was there, the headmistress, Patricia Carey, she's kind of an amazing woman, she kind of saw something in me or whatever. And in those days, companies applied to get somebody and they picked them out. It wasn't so as fair. It was like who they liked or who they thought or who they recommended. And I started with Nixdorf Computer. That's how I got into the corporate world.
In Cork.
And
did you do a degree then? No.
No.
You
know. Then I went and studied marketing by night in CIT while working.
Okay.
So I didn't do the traditional route of college and then I probably have been studying constantly since. And it is probably ongoing learning and lifelong learning, which you do, because, you know, things change and ideas change. So, and really, I went into Next Door of Computer, and someone said, don't mention them, you know, that makes you sound really old. It's like, who are Next Door of Computer? Became Siemens Next Door. And then from there, I joined Flextronics, Dovatron. I went to London when all the Irish did, so that was the London Irish Rugby Club. We all followed them.
When was that?
Oh, God. It's definitely 25, 30 years ago. Yeah, about, yeah.
Late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, yeah. It's a long time ago.
And what are you doing for them? Like, what job are you at that point?
Next door, I was kind of running their office. So it was all kind of administration things. And then I went into kind of sales and marketing with them. I went into customer service in Western Digital. They used to make printed circuit boards.
Right.
And I was kind of take their orders from the French, English and whatever office. Then I went to London, worked in Reuters. In London in marketing.
Right.
So I'd studied marketing.
So Reuters obviously is famous as a news agency, but they've loads of other data that they gather and they sell to companies that isn't just the news stuff that you see.
Yeah, it wasn't the news at the time. It was financial information and products around that.
Okay, so to the City of London and to Wall Street kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so at that point, your experience is vast and broad and not any kind of particular, which it seems to me in retrospect is the perfect way to learn how business works. Do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, true. And I think when you're young, in your 20s, you can do that. I often say that to younger people. I say, you know, you're going to have to specialise at some time. And don't, you know, don't specialise too much. Because, you know, so that's why those grad programmes and intern programmes, like places like Vodafone has, come in for 18 months, you do 6 months in finance, 6 months in marketing. So, you know, it's really good because, of course, as a young person, you don't understand business. You don't understand the vast choices that are there.
No.
I mean, we understood kind of nursing, teaching, banking, you know, at the time. And there wasn't very many multinationals, even in Ireland, and opportunities. And then I came home. And I worked for Golden Pages, which I called the Google of its time, because it was the only place anyone could advertise. It was radio, local newspaper, or Yellow Pages, Golden Pages.
Yeah.
And I was in the southeast area, and I travelled by car all around to all businesses.
The small businesses.
Yeah.
Right.
Talk about their, and that was fantastic. Now, interest rates were 17 or 18%. I remember that being a big issue. It was a real tight time for businesses. But they had to advertise in the Golden Pages, whether it was window panes or carpets or plumbers. You had to be there.
Yeah, because every house in the country got one.
Exactly. And there was no internet. So I went there, and while I was actually in Waterford, I used to train with Waterford Crystal Swimming Club every morning before I went off on the road. There was no public swimming pool in Waterford. Would you believe that? I just remember that. But and driving around the country, it was fabulous. And then I came back to Cork and worked for them in
what leadership skills do you think you had at that point that led you down that route? You know, was it like organisation? Was it communication skills? Was it management skills? Was it, you know, what was it that you think that you drew on? What leadership strength did you draw on?
I'm thinking back then I was an individual outselling, really. So I suppose I didn't become a manager or leader later, managing teams of people. But I suppose what you learned, you know, you had to be self-motivated. You had to get up every morning and go and make your calls and do the. So you had to be organised. I think you had to be resilient because you got a lot of setbacks and doors slammed in your face, you know. And it was kind of up to you, you know, how well you did and how much money you made and how successful you are, you know, because, you know, you had your customer base, but you had to make it successful. So influencing people, probably influencing skills, communicating well, why it was important, building relationships with these customers who are running their business, who are paying 17% interest rates on things, who didn't have a lot of money, putting their trust in you.
Mm.
You know, so I think the hard work, you know, as well.
Mm.
You know, I worked hard. I worked long hours. You know, it doesn't come easy to anyone. You know, it doesn't just happen. But I didn't think at that time I'm going to be the CEO of a large company. And that's another thing I say to people. A lot of people are constantly thinking about what they want to be and the next steps and not focusing on what they're doing. I often say to people, focus on doing a great job now. And with that comes opportunities. And I often say that to people in Vodafone. You know, just do a great job there, because we look at people and we go, he or she, you're doing a great job. they can do more, give them more responsibility or take a risk on them, give them something else. And, you know, so I think that's probably what kind of happened. And I grew in confidence, I suppose, in my own ability, you know, being successful. I was very successful, and I was the highest performing salesperson on the road at the time. I used to be, I've come up to Dublin to tell them all what I did. What I did was like make appointments, get up early, go out and meet people. I mean, it wasn't actually that complex, you know, tell them how it was going, how it was going to help their business, show them. So, you know, influencing, communicating.
Do you think, you need a certain personality style? You know, like, do you think, you know, I think a lot about extroverts and introverts and, you know, where people, you know, we've got a lot of lads at Leinster who would be pretty quiet, really. Mm. Pretty quiet, quite reserved, more on the introverted scale than the extrovert. Mm. And I say to them, listen, obviously, you know, you are who you are, but in order for you to be successful with this rugby team, we need you to take the step to be a little bit more outgoing, to communicate a bit more, to ask questions in meetings, to talk on the field, to make decisions. Do you think it's possible to, you know, to be on the quieter side and still be successful in that type of work?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, about teams, diversity is key, all types of diversity. So, you know, you need introverts and extroverts, and you need different types of personalities. And I always say that in Vodafone, you know, my team needs to reflect our customer base. So every type of diversity is. So I think, look, you know, people have their strengths and their development needs. So, you know, if you have introverts and they want to become leaders, you know, they probably have to work a little harder on, you know, getting their voice heard. So tips like, you know, you need to, you know, at those meetings, I'd like your opinions, because they probably have very good opinions and they want to get them out. So I often say to someone, like, you know, try and get it out earlier in the meeting. Mm. Say, you know, because you don't want them for the hour of the meeting going, when am I going to say this? And they're stressed out of their head. So, yes, I mean, that's coaching people. And yeah, I am an extrovert, definitely, and I know that. And I like being with people, and I live off being with people. But like everyone, I lead my quiet time. And again, introverts, you want to encourage them to make sure their opinions get out, that they do speak up, that their voice is important, but they have to work a bit harder. But definitely, I still think introverts, you know, can be leaders. And I have worked for introverts, actually. Mm. But I think it's identifying those things early on and then working on them.
Yeah. I think one of the key things I learned, I did a psychometric profile of myself. It was through a leadership coaching course. And I did that, I think, at 28 years old. And I probably knew instinctively what kind of my strengths and weaknesses were. But actually, this gave me the sort of the evidence behind it. And then I began to realise, OK, so these are my strengths, these are the areas I need to work on. And it sort of grew from there. So I try and do that a lot earlier than I did it with the players at Leinster. So the younger players now, right, let's understand what type of person you are. Let's raise your self-awareness about who you are. And let's try and grow you as a leader so that then by 25, 26, 27, they're leading rather than 32, 33, 34.
And how open,
by the time we've retired.
How open are they to feedback saying you're not good at this and this? I mean, obviously it needs to be.
But you'd never say it that way. But No, they'd be very, it'd be excellent. I mean, the players in Leinster that I coach, the players I've met in Ireland, you know, they are so receptive to want to get better. You know, the culture at Leinster is excellent, really, in terms of the lads' desire to self-improve, you know, the pursuit of excellence, and they definitely buy into that. And that's why I think, you know, the team's successful.
And can we go back to the lifelong learning? Because that's kind of part of that as well. So you did a marketing at night in CIT. What else have you done over the years, like up to this point?
Constantly. it's ongoing. So, you know, I've gone to London Business School for a month. I've done Harvard. I just finished my Charter Director Programme. And, you know, over the years in IMI, finance for non-finance. But, you know, and we have a load of in-house courses, and I go on them, and Vodafone, like everyone else, digital skills are the latest. So I just think you can never stop learning, and things change, you know, methodologies change and thinking changes, and I think you have to constantly do it. So absolutely anything that's on, I'll go to, and I like sitting in even on the Vodafone ones because they see that I'm learning and that I'm attending things. And as a leader, if they see you doing things, they're more inclined to go and attend. You know, we have another program Monday now. It's a big thing on calls and whatever. It's the latest thinking. We have some consultants in, and I'm going to this. So there's a huge turnout. One, to learn, but to set the scene for everyone else that we need to constantly learn and raise our game. Because I have this obsession with it's never good enough, that we're never good enough. And I don't know what that's about, but complacency, I think, is a huge issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, for Vodafone, you know, yes, we have the best network and we're the most trusted and the net promoter score is all good, but you never get arrogant and you never get complacent, because the world changes so fast, the competitors change, the demands of and expectations of consumers and businesses. So this idea is how there's always something we can get better and learn on. So I have this unending thing inside me that, you know, for me, even a CEO, to get better and be better. And also, it came up yesterday, we had a thing and someone talked about, also, you know, business can be going great and everything's going great, like the economy's great in Ireland and everything's good, but you can have someone, Brexit, you know, Donald Trump, you know, things happen.
Events
happen. And you need to be ready. And you need to be as lean, as efficient and as productive and in the best place compared to your competitors, so that you can react and deal with them. And it was like the recession 10 years ago, you know. So I constantly think like that and talk like that. So it's kind of relentless in Vodafone about this without, you know.
Well, I was about to ask, right? Because we had a jockey in this morning talking about he wanted to be the best. He was a champion amateur, but he actually just wasn't good enough to make, because he's up against world class, the talent pool that came through when he was coming through. And his drive drives him to very dark places. He ends up with alcohol issues, drug issues and depression issues. And it's this kind of constant need to, he needed a lot of counselling to get to the point where he understood exactly what the drive was. So drive is brilliant and it's great, but we all need to at some point just go, we did something really good today. We achieve something amazing when your net promoter score comes in. How do you balance that?
So I completely agree. So firstly, you know, I'm not talking about the relentless, you know, that you're driven to alcohol or drugs.
Sure.
Or like, honestly, you know, I'm not talking about that. You know, this is a 9-to-5 job and they go home. Like people, we don't have late hours or, you know, it's just Ireland. We're not dealing with, you know, so, and people can train in the morning and to look out. So there's a real... It's just this pursuit of excellence, not this obsessive that it's going to affect your health or it's not healthy environment. So you're creating a culture and an environment where we have high standards of behaviour, of transparency, of ethics, of how we deliver for our customers. And I always talk about these things. And, you know, we make the right decisions that we can look back on with pride, I say. Why did we make that pricing decision? Why did we do that? So I don't mean it in terms of that, maybe that sporting things where people do. But there's, you know, in business, you can't be complacent. And it's just that balance all the time. But you mentioned celebrating success is another huge part of what I talk about and what we do in Vodafone. And as a leader, I like to do. You know, we launched our 5G yesterday in 5 cities and it was about robotic surgery. So we talked about technology for good, how proud we are of that and the robotic surgery that can be done of our network so that people can pause. I think that's very important that you bring that up, that we celebrate milestones of success. Otherwise it becomes, it's never good enough. And you know, you get the slap across the head. You know, no, it is the balance of, oh God, praise, reward, celebration, you know, and everyone's great, you know, and so, and there is that balance, but we do that a lot. And I do spend a lot of time, you know, acknowledging work and achievements of people that have gone above and beyond, because you want to keep them motivated.
Yeah.
And you want to keep, what I say is we have 2,000 people working for Vodafone. Every day, if every one of them getting out of bed can just go that extra mile, just that little bit, everyone's motivated. And to do it, we'll achieve great success, and we'll do much better than our competitors, because in a lot of times people mightn't feel like that about their work.
Yeah.
It's a bit different in professional rugby, let's be honest. They're probably self-motivated already, and they've got, but sometimes work can be a chore for people.
Oh, yeah.
And you just want people to feel appreciated, feel a culture that I'm going to be acknowledged in, and that I'm empowered and allowed to go that extra mile and allowed to take a risk and maybe fail as well. You know, so there's all those, but it is the culture and environment and the trust you build up and the team spirit that's built up and the cooperation between people and functions, which is another area that's very important to me. I know we say hashtag team of us, which is suit. I love that in sport. But in business, you can get where a function or a person thinks it's about them and they're competing within the company, when you're saying the competition is outside the building.
Yeah.
I say, you know, we are only successful when we're successful together. Not one area has done great and four areas have collapsed. So there's a lot of, you know, comparisons with sport as well. But it's the competitiveness you want in people. But it has to be a team thing about what's best for customer, what's best for the company, what's best for the people.
Yeah, it's pitching that at the right level, really.
Exactly.
Because sometimes, you know, I look at the sports careers of some great people, some of the very elite sports people who didn't seem to get that much joy from it. Like, during his playing career, it didn't seem like Roy Keane got a lot of joy from winning all those medals. And you think maybe he's going to look back in time and go, oh, I could have enjoyed that a bit more at the time. Like, did you guys get to enjoy the success of last season, or does it just roll on? Because I remember coming in here, it must have been a year ago, and saying, oh, you guys are the best team in Europe. And you're like, no, we were the best team in Europe. the new season has started again.
No, you definitely want to enjoy the moment. You know, I mean, those memories, those moments in the dressing room immediately after a game that you've won, and it could be, you know, a Pro 14 game where we've put a young team out and we've won. You know, they're as special as, you know, the Champions Cup games and the Pro 14 finals. You know, the turnaround, you know, from losing a Champions Cup final against Saracens to then beating Munster, then beating Glasgow up in Glasgow, you know, was huge for us, really. And the sense of achievement, even though, yes, 2 weeks ago we were at our lowest point, to beat Glasgow in Glasgow was huge for the group. And I actually made a mistake because I needed to get back to Leeds for a whole variety of reasons. So I booked my flight on that. We got back on the late Saturday night, but we got back so late from Glasgow, it was like 2 a.m. in the morning, so I went to bed, to be honest. Anyway, Sunday I got up, met the management, had one beer, and then I said, sorry, I've just got to go, I've got to get the taxi. And I was sat at home watching TV thinking, I've missed this moment somehow. But it's important for the players, and we do try and get that balance right all the time, because it's such a tough sport to play in, and victory is so hard to achieve. You know, the margins are so fine.
Yeah, so you do have to be aware of these things as well.
Definitely. You've got to try and encourage the players to. I mean, the players at Leinster are so driven to want to succeed, so when they fail, you know, they can come in on Monday morning and feel like, you know, the world's ended. And I'm actually the guy saying, listen, boys, you've got to let this go. You know, we've got another game this week. Let's move on. So we go through the review, we learn what we could have done better, but then we've talked about the sumo call,
yeah.
Shut up, move on. And then the boys have come a lot better at now parking defeat to move on to their next challenge. And I think that's really important as a leader, that you can do that yourself first, because if you can't do that yourself, you know, if Anne comes into the office and she's like depressed because things aren't going well at, you know, at work or at home or wherever, then, you know, people will pick it up like that, and her mood can bring other people down.
Yeah. And it's
that's how you portray yourself as a leader. It's how you carry yourself and how you get them to feel. They pick up a lot on your cues.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the bit where you've learned all these skills? When do you start to put them into? When do you start to manage teams? How does that begin for you?
So I joined ESAT Telecom. So that was taking on Aircom at the time on the fixed line business. And it was over 20 years ago. So that's when I got into kind of telecoms and techie. And I was like, sure, I don't know anything about techie. But it's funny, you can learn anything if you want to learn it. And I got into that and I started managed the Cork, Limerick, Galway, everything outside of Dublin, all their offices. And, You know, I don't know if I was the greatest leader at the start. You know, I think I probably more just told them all what to do and expected them to do it. And they probably did most of it, but it probably wouldn't work now. You know, so you evolved.
What was that role?
I was the sales manager. I managed all the offices outside of Dublin for ESAT Telecom for about 8 years. And then British Telecom bought us. I came up to Dublin for a year. That's about 15, 16 years ago, and I'm still here, unfortunately.
Right.
I'm only joking.
You love Dublin, really.
I do love it, but I can't say that to the Cork people.
Were you getting, in that eight-year window, when you started managing teams, were you getting itchy feet towards the end of that eight-year period to think, I need a new challenge, or you're actually just loving what you were doing?
Yeah, I probably within the period, like I started managing the Cork office, then they gave you Cork Waterford, then they gave you Limerick. So you kind of kept getting promoted and more.
A new challenge came
and
every
more
year,
people.
Yeah.
And you started with the sales team, then you managed all the engineers and everyone. So there was always probably more and more and loads to be done. And then obviously when I went to Dublin, it was all Ireland, and then British Telecom was north of Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, which brought its own challenges in terms of, you know, culture and different. So I was always getting more responsibilities, to be honest, and I was always probably evolving and learning. But, you know...
Did you find you did less hands-on? You know, sales or...
Oh, marketing? Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so your role evolved to a leadership managerial role? Rather than what you'd originally...
Absolutely, you know, yeah. And you do. And as you get bigger, you know, it's the people around you that you hire is probably key, you know, and understanding your own capabilities and your own strengths and your development needs and surrounding yourself with the people.
So Stuart did testing when he was 28 to do that. How did you assess your own capabilities? Did you have somebody outside you that you could go to and say, these are the things I think I'm good at, what do you think about that? How does that work?
Well, look, when you're in the corporate world, you're constantly getting feedback, 360 feedback. You know, it's constant. You get, you know, anonymous feedback. You'd have all these surveys and psychometric testing. You know, I've been tested to life. So it's good. Like, it's good because it's clear and also it's anonymous. You get it from your direct reports. You get it from peers. You get it from bosses constantly on what you're good at and what you need to work on. And then it's, okay, you have capabilities and skills, which could be, you know, you need more finance or analytical or digital skills around you. And then there's behavioural as well, which is important that you have the introverts and the extroverts and age diversity. Gender diversity was a huge thing that I've worked on for years and brings a different dynamic as well, especially in the technology industry. 20 years ago, there weren't a lot of women, so I worked in very male-dominated, which brought its own issues. You know, I kind of dressed and looked like a little man, you know, because you couldn't really be feminine. But, I'm, you know, that was my issue as well, as the environment I was in. You know, but it's a combination. My husband said, you look like a little man going to work. I said, exactly. So you kind of wanted to blend in. And now when there's 50-50 around the table, you can be more yourself.
Yeah.
I actually even used to follow Man United because they used to all talk about soccer. I used to go to the Man United games because that was the conversation. You know, I couldn't talk about things like shopping or I wanted, or that was a nice handbag because they'd be looking at you. So it's interesting. So, but in terms of... Yeah, I think feedback, constant feedback, being open to the feedback. And obviously when it's given anonymously, it helps people. And listening to that and then trying to develop and then doing it again to see if that's improved. And, you know, I've regular one-on-ones with my direct reports and we have good conversations.
Would you have a mentor or someone who mentored you? Or
I do. I've always had mentors.
From outside the business?
Outside, yeah. I have outside and inside. In group, and I've an outside coach, and you know, I'd meet, how are things going, what's going on, and some of the coaches would do some of my direct reports in the team as well, so you're getting the dynamic of what's going on. But I like in the business world now, in most of the big, you know, it's full of feedback and data. I mean, there's no excuse for you to not to know your development needs, and I suppose you can get it and you can decide to ignore it, which is probably not a very good idea because you're not going to get better or learn, or the company's going to feel you're not listening. Just like I have to do it with my direct reports, but also to build on your strengths And I often say, a lot of people, years ago, people said, you know, focus on your development needs is like sticking needle pins in your eyes, you know. But you do have to be aware of them. But it's your strengths which has got you there as well.
So you build on those.
Well, you build on those as well, and to use them, to know them, and not to, like, sometimes it's all the development needs. And I say to people, look, you are an introvert and you're not going to be talking a lot. I understand that. You're great for you. So let's look at how we work on that, that works for you. And you were talking about some of the rugby guys. You know, I see it, you know, the ones that walk up to me and they shake my hand, just very mannerly, very professionally. Some of them are quiet, but whether they've learned that or that's the right thing to do and that's respectful of the sponsor, but it's really nice, you know, and they're not necessarily the extroverts.
Yeah, but it's something, we had a guest in at Leinster this week, and Joe Schmidt brought it into Leinster from France, where everyone comes in, everyone shakes hands with everyone in the morning. And so you get a guest in, and guests, you know, I've had three or four guests across from the UK and various other parts of the world, actually, and everyone's going, God, geez, this is amazing, the way they greet people, the way they make the people feel. And what it does, it creates an equilibrium in the squad so that Johnny Sexton would always shake the hand of all the youngest players, and so they feel part of, you know, a senior player group. But also, the young player grows the confidence to have eye contact, shake hand, and meet and greet. You know, people say, hi, I am.
And stand up in meetings and say, I don't understand how this play is going to work.
Exactly. And I think that's been a really, you know, there was a guy came in last week and he said he thought it was amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
What you saw.
And I see it with the rugby players, interacting with them. But it's interesting as well. And then knowing your team, like at meetings. So if you know someone is quieter and more introverted, you make sure they're included. Mm. So you'll go, you know, Stuart, what's your view on that?
Yeah.
There you go. You're opening up, and suddenly, so you knowing the strengths and development needs of your people helps. And the person that's always yakking, you know, you can kind of, but if so, you get everyone's feeling included and respected, even though they have different behavioural strengths and weaknesses, you know.
So your leadership style, I think, is something that you've kind of always had, but have been developing slowly as you go along, as opposed to radically changing at any point in your career.
I have worked on it, you know, and I have to listen and I have to make sure that everyone has a voice. And I've learned more about empowering, you know, and, you know, not micromanaging. So once, you know, at my level, the people I hire have the experience and the capability. So they're qualified accountants. They've worked, you know, highly. But what I really look for is the mindset, I call it. And that, for me, in business is the most important thing. And in leaders, I call it a growth mindset. I heard talk about the learning mindset, to be able to change, to adapt. And that, like, they're all going to have, you know, qualified HR, all the qualifications in the world. They also have the experience usually when I bring them in. But can they change and adapt? And can they learn? And are they really open? Because our world is changing so fast. You know, it's dynamic. And having a prescriptive way of working, you know, you have to be open. And for me, even saying, you know, and the different people we're hiring, you know, all the different types of people, you know, they can't be mirrors of me or mirrors of them. And how, you know, how are you doing with the 20-year-old, you know, whatever, bearded guy that wants to start work at 11 and finish at whatever? And then, you know, how do you know, presenteeism, that you don't need, that you don't need to see people, that there's trust, you know, and that you can inspire them to give it their all, but respect the type of person they are. Because there's not, you know, people say we have guidelines, we have processes and we have procedures and this is the way it's done. That doesn't work now. You know, in business anyway, it doesn't. You have to really adapt to the people and the personality.
I would say in sport more so. Because I think the best teams are the adaptable teams.
Yeah.
They have to have adaptability, not just within game to game, but within the game itself, you know, and the best. You know, in my first year, we lost two semi-finals against Claremont and against Scarlets, and we played, particularly in the Scarlets game, one particular style. And the point I tried to make the players is, for us to be the best team, we have to be adaptable and play different styles. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we play pressure rugby, sometimes we're putting the ball in the corner and we're going to drive a line out and we're going to score three, then six, then nine, and win the game that way. Sometimes we're going to play Leinster rugby and we'll keep the ball alive and And it's understanding the flow of the game, the understanding the referee, the opposition, when are we in our flow, is it raining, is it this, is it that, and having the players, coach the players to a point where they can be adaptable in the moment without us intervening. And to be honest, as a coach in a rugby game, it's virtually impossible to intervene and make that change anyway. And that's the biggest step forward we made, I think, in the last couple of years. And that's also making sure the senior players have that adaptability with them, even though they might have a bit like, you know, and brings in a new senior employee who's come from a different organisation. Yeah, we always do it this way. No, you know.
Yeah.
This is the way we do it. But equally, within our organisation, you have to be adaptable as well. That's the key.
Yeah.
It sounds as well like a lot of that is about recruitment. The players come through the academy, they're only going to make it to the senior team if they have the growth mindset. And from your perspective, it's finding out what it is, the traits of successful candidates over a long period of time, the common thing that they share is their ability to listen to what we're saying and then come back at us with other things. Because we're talking about leadership style on a kind of an individual level. At the same time, as the CEO, you also have to set the strategy as well. Mm. So that's like an entire other day's work. But, you know, it's great being good in one-on-one, while at the same time, there's the National Broadband Plan, there's 5G, there's the future of television and mobile devices as well. It's quite a big gig.
It is a big gig, but that's what makes it so interesting. It's fantastic. And yes, and I love talking about strategy and the ambition and the vision for the company. And I suppose I really like that part and setting big, audacious goals for us and being the best and being the leaders and what that looks like and what we have together. So, sorry to interrupt.
Do you feel like you always have to be the person with those ideas? Or how did, like, because you can't be. It can't just be your vision, your singular vision for it.
No, but, you know, no, it's not mine, but you're kind of inspiring people to think about what that is, to be a part of it, and to write it, and to define it with you. So we have our strategy days, and we have our away days, and we have, you know, our direct reports and a group of people part of that. So they help define it. But you're kind of, I suppose, the leader, you know, there is that role where you do have to be setting that ambitious target and that there's kind of, you know, no limit to that, you know. So
I agree. I mean, I think you've got to set the vision.
Yeah.
It's your job as a leader to set the vision in front of the people that you're leading. And you don't necessarily have to get all the tools to achieve the vision, but you have to definitely have some inspirational quality that you can inspire people with. I think it is part of, if you want to be the number one in a big organisation or a team or a whatever, then I think you have to have inspirational quality.
And because you're not touching people every day as well, so I have my direct reports and whatever, but you have 2,000 people.
Yeah.
So they have to be inspired by you, and some of them are in my retail shops or whatever. Now, obviously, thankfully, with social media and we have our own workplace and I can do a lot on video, we have a lot of get-togethers, but communication, constant communication is key. And they're about achieving milestones, celebrating success, celebrating people. So they're kind of on the journey with you. Right, they see the ambition and the vision and they're inspired by it, but they see all the milestones you're hitting. So you're feeling this accomplishment as you go on it. But you as the leader, yeah, I do think that leader does need to be that person. Now, if they're not, and in some companies you sometimes have that, but it could be a right-hand person or a left-hand person. So you know, you mightn't have the great, maybe extrovert or communicator, but they'll be, you know. But, you know, some of the newer leaders now, like Satya Nadal, Microsoft and all them, they're not big extroverts. They're a lot of techie engineers now.
Yeah.
But they're wonderful communicators and they're very purposeful as well. That leadership, you know, which I really do, doing good and doing good business. I keep talking about, we can do good business, which I mean good commercial, financial results, profitability, all those lovely things that you need. But you can do good in the world. People love that.
Yeah.
And you can do both. So there are more and more leaders talking about those things, communicating, bringing people on that journey. And of course, it is easier with the tools we have now. You don't have to go and talk to all of them. But I do spend a lot of time traveling and with people and going to events, and kind of saying hello to them and, you know, them feeling they know you and they trust you. I think in this world we're in now, we're seeing funny things in politics, let's be honest. You know, there's more, certainly in business and younger people, They want to be with a leader that's authentic and trustworthy, with strong values and ethics, and a company that cares about the planet, does social good, environmental good, not just economic good. And consumers are the same now. They're making choices, and I think we're going to see more of that. And as a leader, you know, people want to be led by those leaders. I want to be led by those leaders. You know, it's kind of why I like Vodafone. I like the values that are there and how they care about the social impact of our technology and the environmental impact and the climate change. Those things mean a lot to me, and they mean a lot to the people that work in Vodafone as well. So that's your other role as a leader.
Yeah.
Were they there when you arrived in Vodafone?
Do you know, and how, when not did you as arrive? How? 11 years ago. So I think they were there, but they weren't as explicit. I think they were implicit, right? Which is nice. So they're within Vodafone, but I don't think they were talked about enough externally. And, you know, when I joined 11, I set up the Women's Network in Ireland, and half of them were looking at me going, what? Like, I was kind of way ahead of my time. You know, and I said, well, you know, I was 40, and I said, there wasn't any women's network for me. And I said, I want to help women, because there wasn't a lot of help. So let's do it for other women that may not be as resilient as me, you know, to be, because a lot of women just left the workforce and said, I can't put up with it. Or, you know, having young children, they don't understand, and there's no flexible working, and I can't even mention I have children, you know. So I wanted to make it easier. But in fairness to Vodafone Group, it is like that, but I think they did a lot of stuff and never talked about it. So now we talk more about diversity and inclusion, about the benefits of the digital age, about the environmental impact and our role in that. And because I think people want to hear about that, because there's a bit of a, you know, an anti-corporation and capitalism, which I can completely understand if it's at the expense of the planet or at the expense of inclusiveness or openness or...
Yeah. That's a really good way of doing business, because if you can understand the world that you live in, then you can actually help change it, which is pretty amazing.
Well, you know, when I
became... Most people aren't like that. Especially, certainly, you don't ever hear CEOs saying, I can understand people being anti-capitalism. Like, you just don't. It's a very rare thing, I think.
Yeah, maybe it is, and I don't know, but it's what motivates me completely in my role. And when I became CEO 6 years ago, somebody said to me, I was CEO and I didn't do enough in the role. Don't regret that. Mm. So I spend every day trying to say that when, you know, in 10 years' time or 15 years' time, that I look back and said, I did everything for diversity and inclusion, whether that be gender or LGBT or age diversity, whether it was the environment or whether about encouraging other companies to do good, to invest in sport, to sponsor sport, whether it's, you know, ISPCC Childline. Like, we have a huge, powerful influence, companies. Most of us are very profitable. We can, you know, do good. And yeah, you're right, not enough do it, and I called that out, but more and more are now, and we're hearing it, and I think there's a change in the world. You know, you can make good profits and do good. And consumers are making choices. Do I go with them or them? And, you know, it looks the same, but I just, you know, maybe I go with them because they sponsor the rugby team. I like rugby. They support rugby. Maybe I go with them, the ISPCC Childline. Maybe I go with them because I've heard the boss talk about gender diversity and we care. Maybe I go with their board is gender diverse. The company is gender diverse. But if you think about, you know, our products and our marketing, everything has been done with a diversity lens, so the product should be better.
Yeah.
The marketing should be better. You know, people are getting, you know, we do better business, and all the data and results show that. So I'm passionate about all these things and just doing right by our customers, and they'll reward you. And they have. In Ireland, you know, we have 44% revenue market share in mobile, and we have huge competition. And I think people stay with us because of all the, and it's not one thing though.
No, it is a thousand
small things.
Yeah.
And as you said, as a leader, it is a thousand small things, and that's why you need to be fit and healthy, because you need huge energy. You need to sleep at night, and you need to be, you know,
yeah.
And people forget.
No, it's true. Say,
but you need to be energetic. You could be an energetic introvert as well, by the way, but you know, and people are, you know, long hours, challenges, how do you keep all the balls going? But you need to do it.
Good point to finish this on is, what's your time going to be tomorrow in the
triathlon? Oh, slow. Oh, no. No, I don't know. I'm going to beat you in the swim. Where are you doing
cycle,
the bike?
I'm doing the cycle.
Okay, well, we'll put it up.
You'll be well ahead of us by the time we get out of the water anyway. So
why? Because you have a slow swimmer, have you?
We actually, Joe Malloy was supposed to be doing the swim, but he's pulled out of it, so we don't know who our swimmer
That's
is yet.
That's not very good.
No, I agree.
You can't really cite an injury for swimming, can you?
No.
Well, if you have a problem, you can take my chip and I'll swim it for you.
Okay.
No, because I can put a few chips on my leg.
Oh, yeah, you can put an extra
so if
one.
You're if we're stuck. Don't not do it.
No, we're definitely doing it.
I promise. Okay.
Why don't you just do the swim and the bike?
I haven't trained for the swim. I think you need to train for it, right?
Oh, okay, Stephanie. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And this was Grace. Thanks so much for joining us in Leaders Questions this week.
Thanks, Ger. Lovely to be here. Thanks, Stuart.
Thank you.
Leaders Questions with Ger Gilroy and Stuart Lancaster.
In association with Goal.
From Off the Ball.